Too many investors leap into the deep end, chasing hot tips or wild bets, only to drown in risks they didn't see coming. In a financial world buzzing with noise, stretching beyond what you know or can stomach isn't just bold, it's dangerous. Now more than ever, getting what you're investing is the lifeline separating smart moves from reckless gambles. In today's podcast, we're digging into how clear goals, a rock-solid strategy, and old-school discipline can keep you from crashing and burning. I'm joined by Adrian Pask, Chief Investment Officer at PSG Wealth, to unpack how investors can dodge the traps of speculation and overreach. Hi, Adrian. Good to talk to you again. There's plenty of evidence of speculation in the market right now. How bad is this? And what does it tell us about the market? Maybe you can also share some examples you've come across and how they reflect on the broader issues of investor speculation.
Yeah, hi, Kieran. It's good to chat to you again and hello to everybody listening. Yeah, I think it's a very topical discussion in the environment that we're in at the moment, because I think some of the speculation seems to be unwinding a touch. We've seen markets be more turbulent and volatile. And typically, you know, when there's things like tariff discussions, et cetera, which is something that we discussed before, hit markets, typically the level of market reaction can be inferred to by the level of speculation in the market. So that's essentially saying the market will tend to be more volatile in environments where there's more speculation. So if there's more froth in the system, the markets will tend to be more severe in terms of any price reaction. And I think that's why we've seen markets move over the very short term in the way that they have. But if we look at what's happened to long-term investing versus speculation, I mean, even if you go through varsity, you know, they sort of separate the two. They teach you what speculation is and they teach you what long-term investing is, and the two are quite directly opposed to one another. But essentially what's happened with, on a very basic level, and this has been happening over decades, is if you look at the average holding period of a stock on the S&P 500, investors in the 1950s and 60s used to invest in a stock and hold it for at least 8 years. To our mind, that's the smart thing to do. I mean, you know, business cycles can be long. So if you find a good company or business to invest in, you should give them a fair opportunity to generate value for the shareholder. I don't think investors in this climate is thinking about buying a share in a business that you believe in and holding onto it for the long term as it grows and generates value for shareholders. I think there's far more speculation. The average holding period is now around 5 months. So you can hardly make an argument that the average investor is buying into a business because they're buying into the long-term philosophy as to how the business model works. And you can see other evidences that, I mean, if you look at oil, for example, we know that there's big volumes coming through trading in the commodity space. But if you look at the value of all the oil that's produced globally and essentially bought up by the big refineries, and you put that against the trading volumes of oil-related financial instruments, it's 400 times the total value of oil being produced daily. So it just gives you a sense of, you know, how hectic this is. And, you know, that's exactly why we've got strategic oil reserves, because if you are at the whim of markets and pricing, you might find yourself in a position where you have to cough up money that you don't have to keep the strategic growth underpinned, because oil is a commodity that's important for growth. So that's why the authorities typically keep oil reserves. It's just too volatile, and that volatility comes through speculation. And if we extrapolate that same type of thinking into the crypto market, for example, as a newer generation commodity, if we look at what's produced daily through Bitcoin mining versus what's traded daily, it's 1,000 times that's being traded on a daily basis. So heavily speculative. And to extend that level of speculation, you've got businesses. A good example would be something like MicroStrategy. So for the listeners not familiar with MicroStrategy, it's a business in the US that buys up Bitcoin, and you can then access MicroStrategy as a listed entity through the stock exchange in the US. And essentially what they do is they buy Bitcoin and you can buy the stock. So it's supposed to be easy access. You don't have to access Bitcoin through an exchange. Then you might have concerns around, you know, is it a credible Bitcoin platform, etc. But essentially, you would expect the market price or the book value of MicroStrategy per share to be roughly the same as the book value of the assets they hold, which is essentially all Bitcoin. But that price to book value is now 3.5 times. So the market is propping up the share big time. If you compare that against something like a Growthpoint, which is also a company that obviously buys property assets and then keeps it on the balance sheet, the price of Growthpoint versus the value of the assets on the balance sheet is 70 basis points. It's 0.7. just to give you an example. But, you know, the story continues. I mean, there's even now leveraged ETFs, and you can buy a leveraged MicroStrategy ETF that gives you 3 times the leverage on a MicroStrat stock. So there's very interesting examples of all sorts of speculation taking place in the market at the moment. There are some more vanilla examples. I mean, it's always good to use the extreme examples to highlight the point. But I mean, to our mind, even what we've seen over recent years, the amount of capital that's flowing into private equity, to my mind, is also investors speculating. And there's reasons why listed companies were historically a good access point. This is where there's heavy regulation, that's true. But these companies need to jump through certain hoops and over certain hurdles to ensure that there's investor safety. So, you know, it's not to say all private equity is bad, but if you can't access capital markets through the normal stock exchanges and you can't access capital through banks, you can go to the private equity space. But you've got to ask why did the banks not give these businesses capital? Why don't they find it being listed easy on the exchange? Is it difficult to meet the requirements? And again, it's a generalization for private equity. It shouldn't be. There are obviously opportunities that could be attractive, but broadly speaking, it's a sign of speculation. And then even more closer to home to the vanilla things that we see in the tech stocks, I think it is an area we've discussed it before. It sort of captures the imagination of investors in ways. You know, if you look at some of the rollouts that they do for new products for some of these tech businesses, it's very easy to see how investors can get captured and find these things very interesting, exciting. So there's plenty of hype around at the moment.
Yeah, it's interesting with MicroStrategy. I was looking at the price quite recently. I think the price is up about tenfold. It was up about tenfold since in the last 4 to 5 years. Of course, it's dropped off very heavily now that the Bitcoin price has fallen off itself. So it's been seen as a proxy for Bitcoin. So the fact that you would get a leveraged MicroStrategy, a stock which is already pretty leveraged to the price of Bitcoin itself, is quite astonishing. What is the, and of course, people who bought in there thinking this is the quick and easy path to riches, they would be taking quite a bath at the moment. What makes these speculative investments so attractive for people at a time like this?
Yeah, I think it's exactly that. I think, you know, in markets, it's always the saying that it's ultimately a game between fear and greed. And what we see more recently is an element of fear creeping into mindset for the guys using the exchanges and purchasing stocks like that. But historically, there's been a strong element of greed involved. So obviously, if you start to ignore some of the other things that are important when you should invest, like research, or do you really understand what you're investing in? How transparent is the strategy? How liquid is the investment if there's an event that you can react or do something? You know, is there cash flow underpinning the valuation, or is this purely just a sentiment type of driven investment? Market perception drives the value, not the cash flow. Those things aren't typically the things we like. But I think the biggest risk there is that your outcomes over the long term is uncertain. So if I talk from a wealth planning perspective and you help a client to formulate a plan for how to reach their retirement goals, for example, you know, you've got to be pretty sure if you put down client X needs 10%, I'm going to give you X fund or X equity to reach your goals, that it gets there. If you undershoot by 1 or 2%, you miss the target significantly, and ultimately that will impact the level of income an investor will get in retirement. So it's not a small risk. And many of these investments, the long-term outcome is still largely unknown. They could be wildly successful, but they could also bankrupt you. So, I mean, it does that seem reasonable to us from using a reliable instrument for planning purposes? Not really the kind of thing that we want to take that bigger gamble on.
Let's talk about overreach, because this is something that's likely to happen. People will get into a speculative mindset if they don't set investment goals. For example, looking at Tesla, it's down more than half this year. A lot of people see it as a buy. All the indices are in the red just in this last week. And they'll see this as a speculator's paradise. How should one approach this market?
No, I think that's really the value of having a very well-engineered financial plan. If you've got spare cash to invest and you do that without a plan, you're largely going to expose yourself to a situation with the internet and marketing and everything else that we read. You could very easily be enticed into something that's not really suitable for what you want to achieve. However, if you've got a plan by which you know exactly what it is that you're trying to achieve and for what reason. So I'm saving for retirement, I need X. And to get to X, I need to save Y monthly and generate a return of Z per annum over the long term. Now, you've got at least a foundation that sets your expectations. And if these other tempting things come past, you can say, well, how does that fit into my strategy? Do I really need to assume that level of risk? So let's use a Bitcoin example. Do I really need that level of risk? What is the impact if I miss and things don't pan out as I expect? But typically, when you don't have those variables on the table and you don't think of your investing activities in the context of your broader goals, your plan, your strategy, what you're trying to achieve, you're going to run into trouble. So that for us is really important because it underpins your whole discipline, your whole thinking. And like I said, I think an important component here is we need reliable things when we start to plan for the future. You know, as soon as things become uncertain, if you go back to the statistics that's often quoted, you know, something like more than 90% of investors today won't be able to fund their existing lifestyle in retirement because they're not providing enough or saving enough in pre-retirement. Can an investor like that really afford to speculate if that's your situation? You know, for me, I think it's much more important to then say, well, whatever I do, needs to be a pretty clever strategy. It needs to be well engineered. It needs to be disciplined. And whatever investment vehicle I need needs to be pretty reliable that if it says it's going to generate 12% per annum over the long term, I'm going to get 12%. There isn't a standard deviation around that. It might be 0% or it might be 40%. And let's hope it's 40%. That's not a good plan.
All right, we're going to leave it there. That was Adrian Pask, Chief Investment Officer at PSG Wealth. Thanks very much, Adrian.
It's a big pleasure. Thanks for the chat. Appreciate it.